Welcome to Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we are going to talk about that first presidential debate that happened last week. We're also going to discuss a recent article in Christianity Today talking about the wedding industrial complex and everything around that. And oh, by the way, Pastor Judah is out of the country, so I am joined by a very special co-host. You may have heard of him. All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Engaging Culture Podcast on this ridiculously warm week here in Northern California. I am joined by the always warm Pastor Lance Hahn.
I hope I'm not, 111 degrees, and everyone's like, gosh, I gotta get away from this dude. This is brutal. Hi, everybody. It is Pastor Lance Hahn. That's right. That's true. Yes.
You're here. You're filling in for Pastor Judah. I don't know. Are you up for the challenge?
I don't know. Because every time I listen to this podcast, he just has a totally different groove than me, and I'm like, I am never going to fill that guy's shoes.
You and me both. All right. Best thing you saw this week.
Yeah. Best thing I saw this week should be my wife's birthday. That should be the answer.
It should.
Except for I know she's probably not listening to this podcast. So I feel like I can say whatever I want to say.
That's a good point.
But yeah, she had a birthday, and it was one of those things where, you know, you try to make it special. And so I had kind of all these ideas. And she said, right in the morning, I was like, hey, babe, do you want to go get coffee and walk the bridges? Because we live in Folsom. Mm-hmm. And there's this really neat little walking bridge trail. And she's like, yeah, no, here's what I would like. I would like acts of service. It was very funny. So she's very clear on what she would like.
Yeah, that clarity's helpful.
We did 6 hours of errands and to-dos. And that was what she wanted
for
her birthday.
Wow. Just yes. The romance.
Walking through Costco together, hand in hand.
What could be better?
It was beautiful.
This is, you know, we're going to talk about weddings and sort of a Christian approach to weddings later in the episode. What better motivation to get married than the lifelong...
It's what they have to look forward
to. I'll say this. At least Susie will enter Costco with you.
Yes.
Whereas my wife refuses. She is afraid of Costco, which is a very common thing. I'm not trying to throw shade on her. A lot of people find Costco to be very overwhelming.
Yes.
I love Costco, but I understand.
Well, the funny thing is, so we have whatever the higher membership is for one reason. So Susie can get there at 9 and avoid the scary people.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the way to do it. And I even, we obviously have a job where we work weekends, which means we get a day off during the week. And I was just talking with someone the other day about how that has made me such a wimp when it comes to, retail crowds. If I'm at Costco, it is on Thursday or Friday.
That's right.
Right when they open.
Right when they open.
I remember once during an 11 o'clock service here, I had to go to, Staples to get something. We needed supplies for a meeting that afternoon. And I'm there at noon on a Sunday, and I'm just like, this is the seventh circle of hell.
Anyway, so. And you realize that is what the peasants do.
There are benefits to working on the weekend. All right, well, happy birthday, a belated happy birthday to Susie. My best thing this week was Camp Kids Way. It was just awesome. It was super amazing. Fun. We had so many people on campus. This is funny. So for those that don't know, last year, I played a character in camp for the very first time, and it was like a Steve Irwin-inspired character. So I dressed in all khakis, and I had this dumb attempted Australian accent, and my name was Professor BK, and I was capturing animals and this and that, and we had lots of fun. So this year, they needed me to do a different character, mostly because Pastor Cliff was not available, and I basically needed to cover the segment that he usually covers. So they had me be more of like a game show host type character, but I still kept Professor BK.
I was going to say.
Kept the stupid accent. So I think there were a lot of people that weren't at camp last year who are going, why is Pastor Brian... talking in whatever accent that is, which I was told I cannot call it an Australian accent because it is simply
fair.
It is fair.
But. Yes, I was engaging with it. I did not get a chance to hear Professor BK last year. So walking in and seeing the shimmering gold outfit with the accent, I thought that was Professor BK, and no, it is Game Show BK.
Yeah, you're like, well, we knew this was coming, but he lost his mind. Yeah,
and I have to say, there was so so many things about Camp Kidsway that were so amazing.
Yep.
Little baby cliffhanger is going to stick in my head forever. So for those of you that are listening, Pastor Cliff Woodward, he had put on this crazy outfit, yep. And he would always play, and it was along with Pastor Matt Bach,
yes.
Back in the day. They kind of did a 1-2 punch.
For years, he's been cliffhanger.
Yes. Cliffhanger. And so he has this like motorcycle helmet with these cone spikes on the top of it and this radical outfit. Well, they put it on Ashley Dan's, Pastor Ashley's little guy.
Yes.
And it could not look funnier.
It was
because
fantastic.
It's an adult outfit on a little baby person, and it made him look like a little baby bobblehead because his head, the helmet was so large, and he was absolutely adorable.
Yes, it was amazing. He was fantastic. Definitely one of the highlights of camp. And another highlight, too, is I love camp because it brings together so many different aspects of our church family. You have so many people volunteering, so many people on staff serve and have a role in it.
Yeah.
Our Kidsway team is always so great about really making sure volunteers get well taken care of, so there's good snacks and just a good environment. I love that, like, sometimes I'll walk into the little break room where some of the volunteers get a break,
right.
And it's just tons of people around tables talking. It's awesome. It was a great time. My boys have aged out of Camp Kidsway,
oh.
So they both got to serve, which was awesome. So
there's messy time.
Oh,
outside,
yes. Very
and
messy.
I had to walk through it 2 days that week.
Oh, boy.
Did not escape without masks.
Yeah, well, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, suddenly kids, not only every once in a while kids like to hug me as I go through the campus, they really enjoyed it that
and
day.
And they're soaking wet and covered
yep,
in shaving
that's
cream.
That's exactly right.
All right, well, it was an amazing week at Camp Kidsway, and we'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Hope you've been able to make it out to one of our coffee and theology sessions this summer. If you haven't, I want to tell you about one I am very excited about. It is on July 16th from 6:30 to 8:30, and we are going to be talking about theology of AI and how are we to engage with this kind of growing world of AI as people of faith. We are bringing in Dr. Mark Graves, one of the world's leading Christian thinkers on the intersection of AI and faith, and we'd love to have you come out and listen to his presentation and process what he has to say. The event is free. The cafe will be open 6:30 to 8:30 July 16th here at Bridgeway. You can register at bridgeway.church/events, and we hope to see you there.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We got a brand new segment because we got a brand new topic. And so what we're going to be talking about is that there was a recent first. Now, I don't know if this is a first of many, but this is, I have a feeling that would be a terrible idea. This is the first presidential debate of this go-around, and once again, it was Joe Biden and Donald Trump.
Yay.
Which, so if I feel like we've done this before, but we are doing it again. Now, what's so incredible about it is we are a little bit older than we were last time we did this debate, and it was, I think, a bit of a surprise for some people, especially those that are in charge. I don't think it quite went the way they wanted it to go. And so we're going to talk a little bit about it. And so I just want to say one thing that helps sum up my thoughts about it. And then, Pastor Brian, I'm going to kick a lot over to you here. But there was a funny meme out there, and it says everything I want to say. And here's what it says. To all non-Americans, please do not watch this debate. This is a family matter, and we don't want you to see us like this.
Yes, I saw that meme as well, and I cannot say that I disagree with it. There was another meme that it's going to take me a minute to find that I'm going to try to find by the end of this segment that also I thought captured the tone of it quite well. But I think to that point, I just don't know how anybody came away from Thursday night
feeling good
about
no
anything.
Way. No.
You've got former President Trump. I understand all politicians lie. That man lies with a flagrance and a disregard for reality that it's still, like, this guy has been in the public for a really long time, and it still just sort of stuns me that he can have such craven disregard for the truth, and most of us just sort of nod along. And then you know, current President Biden had one job. He had to get up there and show, I have energy, I have vigor, I am the person that the Democrats need to sort of prosecute the case that Donald Trump is unfit for office, and give some assurance that I'm ready and willing and able to serve for four more years. And he just utterly failed at
that. Yes, that is correct.
He sounded weak. He sounded confused. He seemed tired. The look on his face when the former president was speaking was not one that gave you a lot of enthusiasm for his kind of level of engagement. I mean, it just, the whole thing, it was incredibly depressing all the way around.
You're absolutely right. So there's a couple things I was thinking about. One of them is that as much as we would like to picture ourselves a certain way, age has a factor, right?
Yeah.
And what you were watching is that is not at all what they had in their mind they would want to do.
Yeah.
I think on either side, we have, and I'm trying to think, is it 84 and 79? Is that how old they are? I'm trying
to. No, they're a little younger than that. 82, I think it's 81 and 78, I think.
81 and 78. Yeah, that's good. So now they did not always present their sharpest. But anyway, a couple things that I thought that help encapsulate it. So one thing that helps me understand Trump a little bit better is when winning is everything. And what I mean by that is that he has a joy and a pride in the battle. So there's something about when you have rough and tumble and you hang with different people that are like, hey, you know what? I never tap out. I never do, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I will win at all costs.
Yeah.
What that means is you actually have rules that say, I never admit defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that demands, unfortunately, is keeping a certain narrative running.
Yeah.
So for example, if anything happens in a court case, you would go, I immediately appeal, because that is my, when you're trying to do a winning strategy as opposed to an accuracy strategy.
Yeah.
And it allows me to understand why he does what he does.
Yeah.
Which is almost like if you had a group of people that felt that way and they all sat down afterwards and they were like, that's it, dude, make the other party win. They have to fight you because you'll never give up.
Right.
You will never tap out.
Right.
I think that mindset helps me understand why he says what he says, why he does what he does. This whole idea of, is there anything legal I can do to advance my cause? On either side, I will do it.
Yeah.
And so I had never grown up in that environment. I never grew up with that as a president.
Yeah.
And then when I saw Biden do his thing, it was interesting because I've seen much more. BBC just released a thing this morning about talking about, wow, that was terrible, like about Biden, you know. And they are usually a little bit more on the liberal side.
Right.
Now, of course, they're not from here. So they don't have the same viewpoints. Yeah. But it was so interesting. I've heard more people go, oh my gosh, Biden did not show up. And that was scary to them.
Yeah.
Because I felt like they went, I figured Trump would be Trump.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I saw is that when you have somebody that is ready to fight, it makes the other person look awkward until they try to match that. And if that's not their nature, they actually look a little silly doing it.
Yeah.
So you would watch Biden try to get fired up and fight back, and you're like, oh, dear.
This is not
it's your not great.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you're certainly correct about it. And I mean, we've talked on this podcast before, that, and I've sort of lamented the fact that so much of politics is not really about any sort of guiding principles. It's just about winning. And certainly Trump is a tremendous example of that. And I don't mean to imply there aren't examples of that, you know, across the political spectrum, because they are. But you're right. And ultimately, I don't know that there was anything terribly surprising about Trump's performance.
Right.
But you're right. All across the media spectrum now, Biden didn't show up.
Yes.
The New York Times editorial board just came out the other day with, hey, as an act of service to his country, he needs to step out of the race. The Atlantic.
Yes.
Time to go, Joe. Like, that's a headline. I believe that's what it said. But the gist was, you know, it's time for him to get out of the race. I mean, it was a pretty disastrous performance all the way around. And so here's one element of the debate that you and I didn't even talk about beforehand, but that I think is important. And then I want to talk about what do we think is going to happen from here. Abortion came up.
Yes.
If somebody went into the debate thinking that Donald Trump was pro-life, I'm not really sure what to tell you. Like, he's obviously not. Now, he's not as pro-choice as, say, Biden or many on the Democratic side. But, like, he's made it very clear that his interest in abortion is, to whatever extent, it will help him gain and continue in power. But he, as clearly as he ever has, came out and argued for a pro-choice position in that he would protect access to the morning after pill.
Yes.
Which, again, like, that is, I mean, in lots of, I've read from a lot of folks in the pro-life movement, I myself am pro-life, who have said, like, that is a pro-choice position. And I think it is a further example of just the degradation that we're seeing in politics right now, that we now have two pro-choice individuals running for president, and certainly nobody articulating a moral vision for a pro-life position. And I that, to me, even though I know that Donald Trump is not, like, he does not have a pro-life conviction, and I've argued on this podcast before for the problem of so many in the conservative movement are pro-life as a matter of political expedience, not actual conviction. But it was still pretty stunning to me to see, in such a big environment, neither candidate arguing for the protection of the unborn or anything like that, which, I don't know, it's sad to me, I guess.
In a game of winning, he was known, Donald Trump is known, as the guy who got Roe versus Wade overturned.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, any moderates, any independents, any middle-of-the-road people, all they've heard now is that he was on a rush to create a certain type of society.
Yeah.
What's the winning strategy? You jump in a major debate, drop a bomb to go, no, I'm actually also for you in certain ways. It was a strategy because none of this has to do with what you really believe. It has to do with how do you win. And so we watched it happen right there. He was going, you know what? Honestly, I'll slide them a few here. Look, I'm not going to create this certain thing that you keep saying I am.
Yeah.
And so trying to scoop up anyone that he possibly can.
Yeah, and there's a strategy there because obviously a lot of folks on that. I mean, even Kamala Harris just tweeted out, I think yesterday, that Donald Trump is going to push for a federal abortion ban. Which is not true. Like, that's, like, she's not, and she knows it.
Yes.
But so now here's Trump trying to go, okay,
that's
to concede in an area where you're trying to hit me.
That's right. He's trying to undercut that. Yeah,
there's a gamesmanship. Again, when it's not motivated by conviction.
That's my point.
There's a level of gamesmanship that can happen that is unfortunate.
Yeah. The one thing I think that I left this with as, again, kind of, and it was already there for me, but made me sad, was that the idea of statesmanship, class, and intelligence has left the Oval Office.
Yeah.
In the whole debate, it was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
It's not with Biden. It's not with Trump. And it's sad because I grew up in an era where we were supposed to still look like our job. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have to have that in order to get stuff done? No, you don't. Do you have to have that to interact on an international field? Actually, you don't. But I used to take pride in saying we have sharp, classy people in our office and they represent us well on the international stage, and that is gone. Yeah.
Even if you might disagree with that.
That is correct.
I mean, you look at, I was thinking about this, even 2012, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama.
They're both classy.
They are both, like, thoughtful. Like, you may agree or disagree with
them
politically, and certainly, I mean, most everyone disagrees with at least one of them.
Yes.
But they are intelligent, articulate. Did they do lowball politics? Yeah, they did. I'm not trying to make these guys look like saints. But you want to compare those two?
That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, go back and watch their debates versus what we just, I don't know. So my question for you is, Pastor Lance, let's play a little prognosticator here. What happens moving forward in terms of President Biden, and I'll leave it to you if you want to share what you think should happen, or just what you anticipate will happen.
Yeah, I think that first of all, it has been demonstrated very clearly that the legal ramifications and the folks that are pro Trump are not going to change. Right. This did not change anything. It's the exact same way it was always going to go. You had a few groups get a little disgruntled over the morning after pill, yeah. But really they're all going to stick.
Yeah, it's not like they're going to all go vote Democrat now.
No, nothing's going to change. And then on the Biden side, that's actually where the change is, I think. I think they're scrambling behind the scenes because I think for a long time they were going, we just got to keep quiet. We just got to keep quiet. And it just blew up in their face. So I think they're scrambling to go, is there a way for us to back somebody else, to pull somebody else in? Can we have Kamala go forward? Can we bring in an outside, another agent to come in and be our person? And I think it's pretty late in the game.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to have to double down on Biden and see how it goes. So I don't think... On paper, I don't think it changed anything. I think the structure of how strong people feel about their side absolutely lightened up. What do you think?
Yeah. So first of all, I said there was a thing I saw that I wanted to read and I found it. So this isn't a meme. It was more just like some person tweeted this and a bunch of my buddies found it. But analysis of tonight's debate. Biden, look, the fact is look, here's the deal, and there is no fooling. So that's Biden. And then Trump is, there are 10 billion Guatemalans attacking the Lincoln Memorial right now. Which I was like, okay, you've got one guy who can't finish the sentence, one guy who is, again, just so
making stuff
absurdly
up.
Dishonest. So, yeah, it's so hard to know. I mean, here we are. We're recording on a Monday. This episode will come out on Wednesday, Thursday. Who knows? Like, stuff could happen between now and then. President Biden came out on Friday night and showed a lot more energy and vigor, and I think it was in North Carolina, as he tried to kind of, you know,
make up
reassure folks that he was going to be okay. And I don't know. To me, it just didn't seem like enough. So I didn't watch the debate live. I was here speaking at BYA, and I just was reading a bunch about it afterwards.
Right.
And
yeah.
Honestly, like, got home, and I just didn't really want to watch much. I just wanted to, like, chill.
Embarrassing.
But I watched some of the analysis, and even they're talking to different high-up Democrats who would be potential replacements.
Yes.
Who absolutely cannot come out right now and say, yes, Joe needs to get out of the race. I'm listening to these people for 20 seconds going, they would do a 100 times better job. Again, if Democrats are going, we need someone to sort of argue the case in front of the American people that Donald Trump is unfit for office, just listening to them defend Joe Biden was enough to go, they would do that job
absolutely
so much better.
Yes.
Now, everything that would have to happen behind the scenes,
that's correct,
for the president to step out of the race, for someone else to step back in. And, like, okay, anybody who thinks I could potentially run for president has to have a gigantic ego. Like, you don't think, like, everybody, you don't think, oh yeah, I could be president, if you don't have a huge ego. So you've got, what, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 potential replacements.
Yes.
And now you're saying we need to get those people in a room to go, okay, all of you need to step aside except for one. And they all have to get on board with that. That feels very unlikely to me.
Yes.
But if you're somebody who either is a Democrat or who is a never Trumper or who just sees Trump as a threat, as many people do, to me, the best path forward is not Joe Biden, but we'll see.
In the game of elections, familiarity is more important than the ability to do the job.
That's true. That's true. And certainly current president has that going.
That's the point. Right. And I don't think they can overcome that.
Yeah.
Certainly not get that other person out in front familiar enough in the next 6 months.
It does seem like a pretty tall order.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. It's. I think it'll be if President Biden stays in the race, which if you like, okay, what, Brian Kiely, what do you think is going to happen? Yeah. I think he probably stays in.
Yes.
What do I think he should do?
Oh, that's
different. I don't think him staying in is a good idea. That's just my personal opinion. If he does, okay. But if he stays in the race, I don't know, man. We've had some really rough presidential elections the last 8 years. Like, I just think this is going to be a really depressing next several months.
What I was surprised about this last time around, because I had some of these concerns last time around, What I was surprised at is that they didn't win the election, then shift out in power. That was the part that threw me off, is I was like, at that point, you can say, you know what? We've had a health issue. The president is stepping down. Kamala comes up and we log in our new person that you build over for. I was surprised. I thought they were going to do that.
Huh. Yeah, that would have been, I did not expect that. I expected more that they would go from the jump. All right, he's going to be a one term president. The fact that he's running for re-election and seems to want to do the job for four more years, that was surprising to me.
Yeah, I think that's simply polling.
We'll see. Well, and I don't know. As we try to kind of wrap this segment, I just think, you know, a Christian take on all of this.
Yeah.
It's hard to know. I think that the temptation toward complete disengagement is certainly a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We spent four Sunday nights in April, yes, trying to give some kind of helpful training in how to approach politics Christianly.
Yeah.
I think one thing I would say to our Bridgeway family or others is to go, okay, yeah, this race, whatever side you land on, is pretty depressing. I don't know that there are a lot of folks like really excited about their even those who would go, yeah, I know who I'm voting for. There aren't a lot that are super excited. My advice is just to continue to stay engaged in the political process in general. Make sure that you're getting your information from thoughtful, nuanced sources, not hyper-partisan. And then remember, like, there's a lot more that goes on politically in this country other than the presidential race. And if Christians go, okay, I don't like these guys, it's ridiculous, we're going to back out entirely, like, that void gets backfilled in some not awesome ways. So I do think it's important that while we don't find our identity in politics, obviously, and we don't obsess over politics, I want to caution against complete disengagement.
Right.
While admitting, I feel the temptation toward that.
Absolutely.
Myself. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
Just kind of a Christian take.
Yeah.
On this.
Well, I think just a practical thing is if you don't like the current, you need to fill the queue with better candidates, which means you have to back up all the way down to the bottom level of that of saying local.
Yeah,
have good people in there.
Yeah.
I think because so for me, the Christian part of all of this, a lot of this is not really a Christian debate. It's actually, how do you want to run the business of America?
Yeah.
And you go, well, do you want this person running this? Do you want this system, this structure? But what always matters to God is character.
Yeah.
What always matters. So I'm going to double down on character.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big issue for me. And I'm not peaceful with the folks that we currently have to choose from. I do not believe their character is strong. I do not believe their character is towards the Lord. And I do not believe that they are great for our nation. Now, can God use anybody? Absolutely. I'm not worried about the Lord. I'm not worried about his ability.
He's going to be all right.
He's going to be fine. I don't have any problem with him knowing how to brilliantly work America. I just have a concern about how American people are viewing who they want to lead them.
Yeah.
That is actually a concern for me.
Yeah, no, I share that as well. So not I don't have a good way to put a happy bow on this discussion, but hey, this is where we are. We have a lot to pray about as we continue to press forward. We'll be right back.
All right, I want to just draw your attention to a training coming up. I think in a world that we're going through today, it might be necessary to dive into the supernatural.
Uh-huh.
We have a supernatural training coming up. I'm going to be teaching on two separate topics, and that's going to be healing and prophecy. It's going to be August 4th from 5:30 to 8:30. Now, I got to tell you, there's something special about this. That's the dinner hour. And so there is an option to purchase a meal ahead of time so that we all can kind of have dinner together. Otherwise, you are sitting there sad without a dinner. And anyway, you can purchase that if you want to bring your own. You're allowed to do that as well. It's not mandatory. August 4th, 6:30 to 8:30. Did I say 6:30 to 8:30? I think it's 5:30 to 8:30.
It's 5:30 to 8:30.
Yeah.
Bridgeway.church/events. We'll
there
see
we
you
go.
We are back, and last week there was an interesting article that I came across in Christianity Today called Two Cheers for the Wedding Industrial Complex. It was written by a gentleman named Brad East. Brad is an associate professor of theology at Abilene Christian University. He's written a bunch of books, and it was interesting to me, Lance, not only just in general, but I just thought, knowing you were coming on the podcast, you have some recent experience with the wedding industrial complex, which we will get into. But I thought that the argument he was making was kind of interesting, whereas on the one hand, he was saying that we as Christians ought to, in practice, kind of push back against society's delay on marriage, delay on raising a family and all of that, and ought to actually be encouraging folks in their 20s to go ahead and move forward and get married. And so we should be doing that, number one. But then also he was sort of like equivocating a little bit on, but we've kind of made weddings into this like really huge spectacle, and there are some pros and cons to that. Now, I keep mentioning this, and most folks know that your daughter Jill just got married. So again, yes, you were right in the thick of all of this. I'm really curious to know, how did a lot of what you read in the article land with you in light of your current experience?
Yeah, so just to catch our listeners up, there's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek when he was talking about the wedding industrial complex. So it's basically the big machine that is, your wedding has to be so expensive. There's so many parts to it. There's a million things happening, and you got to have the Instagram this, you got to have the amazing, kind of Etsy that.
Yeah.
And, because we look back, and there's some of us, and I don't think this was true for everybody, but people in my age group, we're going back and we're like, wow, it felt expensive for us. And we did like Kool-Aid and spaghetti,
right.
And so there was a bit more of the idea of, you want everybody there. Now it's, you want it to look good on camera.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, the venue has to be a certain way. The photographer has to be a certain way. I was just talking with another parent the other day. They caught me at Starbucks and we were chatting. And their child, they don't have a ton of money, but the groom has more money. Mm-hmm. They're bringing in a photographer from Atlanta. They're bringing in a videographer from another state. And like, everybody's being brought in from everywhere because they're the look they're going for.
Yeah.
And you go, that's a whole different thing than, we're going to go to the VFW hall and we have some balloons.
Yeah.
That was kind of where I got married.
So. Right. Yeah.
So, and I think that like with Jill, we had a budget and we had to have certain things, and she had to pull a lot of connections, right? In order to pull it off, we actually had to opt for a smaller wedding, mm-hmm, because the venue was more expensive. Mm-hmm. So she said, I actually would like a cute environment. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we have to cut in other areas and pull some strings in order to get it under budget.
Right.
So we did not go lavish and extraordinary. But you have to fight that with everything in you because what's sad about it is, if you do not, it actually begins to take some of your joy away, because those are the questions you're being asked by your friends. Mm. And all the dialogue is actually, oh, we're going to do this, we did this. Well, if you have everybody talking and everybody's watching online and everybody has that, it actually says, oh, you don't care about your wedding if you don't do these things.
Yeah.
That pressure is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I feel it's tough on the kids. And so this whole idea of, and I think that Christians have been like, I can't believe what we did to Easter, and now it's about bunnies, and and it's a million things. I can't believe we did with Christmas, because now it's more about presents than it is about Jesus. I think those things really rub us wrong.
Yeah.
And we kind of go, why are we taking the heart out of everything?
Yeah.
So I think this guy was coming in and going, listen, there's a couple different things on the table here. One, it still has to be about heart. Like, why have we made it something else?
Right.
But he also was trying to really hit this whole idea, and I'm not so sure I agree with him, and I don't know if I disagree with him.
Yeah.
But what he was talking about is, kids are waiting till about 30 to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually shun and look down on people that get married young.
Mm-hmm.
And his argument was, why should that be? 20 is a perfect age to get married. And he said, a lot of that is being drawn in society because of the divorce rate. Everyone's going, listen, my parents crashed and burned. Everyone kept saying, I was young and stupid and I got married too early.
Yeah.
After you hear that a million times, you don't want to do that.
Right.
And as a society, it's almost like everyone started talking so much about it, it has changed how everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
And I think the question I had that I had to ask myself, because actually I struggle in this area, about does the church push marriage too much as an identity?
Yeah.
Jesus wasn't married. Paul wasn't married. Yet somehow we've really made it, if you're not married, you're not Christian.
Right.
You're not mature. Yeah. And I just don't think that's fair. So on one hand, I think that. But on the other hand, do we want the alternative to people getting married? Because that's really what you're left with, right? So people are going to have sex. People are going to live their lives. They're going to cohabitate. They're going to do everything. So you have to ask the Christian community, what do you think is the appropriate structure and support network to support that? And it's going to be marriage. So where are we in wanting it versus not wanting it earlier, later?
Yeah.
I think that's really what the article was.
Yeah, and that's I think you could make an argument for the wisdom of earlier marriage versus later marriage.
Yes.
And I think so much depends on the people, right?
Yes,
like there are 32-year-olds who are not mature enough to get married, and there are 21-year-olds who are.
That's
right.
Correct.
And that's the thing. Something that struck me as I was reading the article is, I don't know, like you and I have both done a ton of weddings over the years.
Yes.
And I feel like I've seen every style of wedding. And the advice I give to couples if I'm going to officiate is always the same. And that is, make the wedding what you want it to be.
Yes.
And don't feel like you need to conform to some other whatever standard. Like whatever is on Instagram does not matter. Whatever is on Etsy does not matter. Now, that's easy to say.
It's easy to say.
When you're in the throes of planning, it can be very
difficult. All your friends talk about it.
Totally. And that's to say, like, I'm not hating on the idea of an extravagant wedding. If you want an extravagant wedding and you have the financial ability to do that, like, go for it. But if you either don't have the money or that's just simply not something that you want, like, don't feel the pressure to do that. Like, my wedding reception was in my parents' backyard and our DJ was my college roommate, who is not a DJ, right? And I love that. And our cake was a funfetti cake made by a neighbor. It was like not picturesque at all,
yes,
but it captured sort of us and kind of who we are. And here we are having our first dance and like on the concrete slab that was my basketball court growing up. Like,
yes,
I loved it. That worked for me. That doesn't work for everybody.
Yes.
I mean, you even referenced with your daughter going, okay, she had certain things that I want this kind of look. Okay, so you selected a venue, so you selected other things that are based on that. I think that when, this is true in so many areas of life, when we are giving into this sort of like hard to define ambiguous social pressure and using that to make our decisions about anything, let alone something as important as a wedding, I don't know. I just feel like it's a recipe for frustration.
And it is.
It's, you can't really pin it down and go, okay, I've accomplished enough that now I'm not going to be frustrated. So I think as Christians, should we be encouraging marriage? Yes, absolutely. Like, if people are going to be cohabitating, having sex, living their lives, like, yeah, like, God wants those folks to be married. Like, that is meant to happen in the context of marriage. Where I think we maybe need a little bit more creativity is just to go, okay, if you want the Instagram wedding, like, go for it. And, like, seriously, like, do it. No judgment. Great.
Yep.
Like, hey, I love going to nice weddings. They're a lot of fun. But if it's more your style, if it's more your vibe to do the small wedding, if it's more your vibe to do the, hey, it's just me and some friends. I mean, shoot, both of my brothers got married in 2023. Both of their weddings were awesome. Like, they were so fun. Could not have been more different.
Yes.
My youngest brother, it was, we spent a weekend at a cabin that his now wife's family owns. And it was basically the bridal party and the family, the like immediate family. And that was it. And
yep,
we spent the weekend together and the wedding was in the backyard. And it was awesome. And now that created drama for the extended family that didn't get invited.
That's correct.
But they eventually got over it. But my point, and then my other brother was a little more traditional and it was amazing. It was a great time. It fit the two of them.
Yes.
And I think that's where more young couples, we just need to be giving permission to go, what is you?
That's correct.
And that the importance is, like, you're getting married. That's the big deal.
Right. You know, one of the shifting a little bit, kind of one of the things that we've been talking about is, when do you get married and should people get married earlier or later? And here's where I think we have caused a problem in our society is that our society has said, hey, you probably shouldn't get married because everything's going to end in divorce and, you know, hey, just do your own thing. Why don't you live together first and all this different stuff? And so what we have done is we have pulled out the support network that used to exist. So the way it used to exist is society said, you have to remain married or we are going to shame you.
Hmm.
Now, when that happened, you could have people go into marriage unprepared and they were forced to work through it. That is eroded. That's no longer the case. Now, if people want to get divorced, they can get divorced very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But so what we have not done to match that, and in my opinion, in the church, we've also stopped training people to be married well.
Yes.
So what we end up having is we say you have no support network and you don't know what you're doing. In the past, you didn't know what you were doing and it forced you to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
That is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we need to do as churches and Christians is to build our young people to be married better.
Yeah.
That would, I think, will stem the tide of the damage because the divorce rate is the same in the church versus out of the church.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that. I think training folks to be married better and then that sense of community to go that like, okay, maybe you're a part of a community with other couples who are figuring it out and maybe there are mentors involved in all of that. You're absolutely correct that weddings, okay, they can be okay, good, great, whatever. What we don't ultimately need we don't ultimately need great weddings. We need great marriages.
That's correct.
And that's where we need to place our focus.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is interesting is people are like, oh, you know, it's a new thing to have this extravagant wedding. You have to understand, this is the Middle East. The whole idea of having an extravagant wedding is ancient.
Yeah.
You spent all your money on weddings. As a matter of fact, I was in my doctoral program. We talked about this young man who he had worked all that he could to pay for a wedding, did a bunch on credit in India, had his wedding, had to move to America, couldn't be with his spouse, and had to work it off for 3 years just to come back and pay for his wedding.
Wow.
So the point was, because there it was, how many people can you involve and how extravagant for the community? It wasn't actually about the couple. It was how do you throw things for your community, for them to have fun? And so talking about these extravagant, it's always been the case in other parts of the world. We are now just having this, oh my gosh, I can see everything online. Now it's a competition. Now I could do more things, more things, more things. You and I didn't have that. We weren't looking at it. You had bridal magazines.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah.
So now when you have 32,000 great ideas, you're picking the bottom of the barrel of it, and it's still more expensive.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, so if you're in that season of life or your kids are or whatever, take a look at the article. It was interesting, an interesting way to kind of think through how we approach weddings. All right, we'll be right back. All right, we are back from our, we've had an interesting episode here, Pastor Lance, as we've talked about the presidential debate and weddings. So, hey, you know, we like to bring a little variety, and we're going to continue with that by ending with a game, as we always do. This is the most common game we play on this show, and it's the most common mostly because it is my favorite. And
okay.
The game is called I Know You're Lying, which, for those who have not listened in the past, here's how it's going to work, is I will present a topic and Pastor Lance will say how many items that correspond to that topic he can name. And then if I believe I can name more, I will say so. And we will go back and forth saying how many we can name until one of us either thinks the other is lying or cannot name more ourselves. Then we will say, I know you are lying, and the other person will have to make good on their commitment to name that number of things. So our esteemed colleague, Josh Oot, I texted him a few minutes ago and he sent me a few topics, and we are going to begin with, Pastor Lance, how many Cheesecake Factory cheesecake flavors can you name?
Okay. Right off the top of my head, I'm ready to go. Oh my gosh. That's not normally my restaurant. Two. I can name two.
Okay. I can name five.
No, you're lying. There is no way. You are not a cheesecake eater.
First of all, you're correct that I don't eat cheesecake often, but cheesecake is amazing. So I love cheesecake.
I'm ready.
So, all right, so
yes.
Plain.
Let's go.
Lemon.
Lemon.
Raspberry.
Okay.
Oreo. And yeah. Dulce de leche.
Oh.
I just Googled Cheesecake Factory flavors. I have not yet opened it because that would be cheating.
That would be cheating.
And
because all I knew was Oreo.
So do you know this? How many cheesecake flavors are there?
Oh, I have no. I don't like cheesecake.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. That's
so not only do I not eat at the restaurant very often, I actually don't eat
you
cheesecake.
You don't even like cheesecake.
So I was right. very limited on
so
this.
So according one. To yeah. 7 seconds of Googling, there are 38 different flavors, which honestly seems low to me. I would have guessed
yeah.
I would have guessed more. But all right, well, there we go. Next category.
Yeah.
How many bands can you name with a female lead singer?
Okay.
So, and just to clarify
yep.
here, Taylor Swift does not count, where she is
solo
the
artist
and has a band behind her.
Yeah.
It has to be an actual band, and they have a female lead singer, past or present.
Okay, I can name four.
Oh, boy. This is going to be a short round. I have to take out one that Josh put in here as an example of an acceptable answer. I don't think I can do five, so I'm going to say I know you're lying.
Okay.
I can do two.
Okay. We got Susie and the Banshees. We have Blondie.
Okay.
We have the Cranberries.
Ah, the Cranberries.
We have No Doubt.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, that's four. There you go.
Okay,
yeah.
Can you name any more?
Yeah. So we have Joan Jett and the Black Arts. Right?
Okay.
If you remember Joan Jett.
I don't, but go ahead.
Oh, okay.
you could just be making this up right now.
Okay. First. Pat Benatar is, now she's not a solo artist per se. Maybe she is. And then we have, oh my gosh. Hold on. I could name 10. I know this.
Okay. Wasn't there, okay, this was not my style of music, but wasn't there a band called Hole?
Oh, like yeah, that's 90s? Courtney Love.
Yeah, okay.
She was married to Kurt Cobain from
right.
Nirvana. Yeah, see, you got another one. Garbage is another one.
Oh,
that's another
Garbage.
Band.
Oh, my God.
And then, and I'm Say Ferris is another one.
Yeah,
that's a ska band.
Paramore was the one.
Paramore.
Josh,
Evanescence
oh,
is another
gosh.
One.
Evanescence, yeah.
So we can just keep going here.
I feel like I would have
forgotten. Heart.
I had No Doubt and Hole. I should have had Paramore, Evanescence, and Garbage. Like,
yes.
yeah. Like, I liked Evanescence. I wouldn't say I necessarily liked any of those other bands, but they were around enough, like, when I was a teenager that I'd heard of them.
If you go into the 80s, you got Fleetwood Mac and Heart and all those bands. Yep. They all had female singers.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Okay. Our last category.
Okay.
Just continuing with the now for something completely different theme of
Amen.
This episode. Foods that start with the letter R.
Foods that start with the letter R.
Foods that start with the letter R.
All right. I'm going three.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
I can name four.
No, I can. Let me think. Five.
See, I'm not even sure I could name five, but I also really want to say that I can name six just to try. I can name six.
Yeah, you can't actually.
I
can't. So
I really telegraphed that I'm lying here.
Yeah, you did. That your okay. poker face is terrible.
Okay. We've got, you know, my wife always teases me that I'm
yes.
bad at lying, and
you
I've
are.
Tried to remind her, like, that's not the worst thing, you know?
It's
like
not the
you
worst
can just
thing.
Know if I'm lying.
Yeah.
Okay. Rhubarb.
Rhubarb.
Rice. Rigatoni.
That's good.
Oh my goodness. There are so many. Why can I not think of any? Raspberries.
Raspberries.
That's four. How many do I have to do? Five or six?
Six.
Dang it! Why did I do six?
Because you're a liar.
Because I'm a liar. Why?
I thought
Even
it was the name
I'm
of the game.
Bad at it. I have clearly lied. Oh my gosh! I don't want to give up, but I also don't want to allow this. Does Ritz Crackers count? No, that's a brand name. I don't know. I got
okay,
nothing else.
What about Radish?
Ah, Radish.
What about Ratatouille?
That's a movie. Plan.
And it's a dish.
I know.
Is it not?
It is a dish.
Okay. Let's see. How about, oh my gosh. No. We just now got into a very sad,
all right,
quiet.
Now we're just going to be quiet and think about all the foods we don't
okay.
know. So hopefully the rest of you did better on this game than I did, for sure. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Pastor Lance, for stepping
super
in.
Super fun to be in here. I'm not as good as Judah, but it's a good step in.
None of us really are. But hey, we appreciate you listening. Do us a favor. Leave us a rating or review if you like what you heard. And we'll see you next time on Engaging Culture. Bye-bye.